Schürrle. Der kommt an! Mach ihn! Mach ihn! Er macht ihn! Mario Götze! Das ist doch Wahnsinn! Und da ist gekommen dieser eine Moment für Mario Götze. Da ist alles andere egal. Irre! Der Bundespräsident steht. Die Kanzlerin.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Beards World Cup podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller. He is Dr. Pete of Tottenham Fandom, and we are normally on the Three Beards EPL podcast, but we're doing a World Cup special. Normally we just have Ken and Pete comes in for the Tottenham highlights, but this time, Dr. Pete, it's a World Cup.
Oh yeah, we're real excited over here, and this group's got one of my favorite teams in it, Germany. Just the all-time most consistent team. And I'm actually excited. You know, I've been getting a lot of feedback now that people have started to listen to the episodes. And one of the things they say that they really like about the podcast is the cool clips that you've dug out of teams scoring huge goals during big World Cup games. I'm very excited to see who you've got up there for this episode.
Yeah, well, the funny thing about those is that you have to dig through and find big goals, but you have to find the right commentary team, you know, with a commentator that blows his top, you know, like just goes absolutely berserk, destroys his voice. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun looking for them and finding them, especially I like the Dutch goal against Argentina in like the 90th minute that Bergkamp scores. I like
the you mean the one where he just screams Bergkamp 20 times in a row at like he's melting.
Yeah, that one's really good. And then I mean the Maradona goal that plays in English. I picked English because I like the disappointment and
oh, the guy is so crushed.
Yeah, you know,
just crushed.
If I'd done it in Spanish, I listened to it in Spanish and they play it like it's a normal goal. They don't. They say that the other team, that the English are appealing for offsides, and clearly they're not. But the English commentator picked it up immediately, and he's beside himself, as he should be. I mean, it was an illegal goal. But yeah, like those have been a lot of fun to pick out. And for this one, I think there's a pretty clear-cut option. We just listened to it, but the Götze goal, of course. I mean, very dramatic.
Oh, sure.
And it'll be, you know, it's a ton of fun.
Yeah, amazing. He didn't do much at all during the whole tournament, and then he shows up right
yeah.
at the end.
And yeah,
quintessential Germany soccer, baby.
Yeah, which is, we're going to get into it, the most successful World Cup team in history, Dr. Pete. We will definitely get into that. You know, I was looking at, we have like a tracker for where we get downloads from. We've been picking up a huge Danish contingent, Dr. Pete, as well as like a big English contingent.
We'd like to welcome the Danes.
Yeah, and we've been to Denmark. We enjoyed our stay. We had a good time in Copenhagen. And overall, I'd say that we enjoyed that company and that whole tour, because that tour we did Germany and Denmark and Sweden, and that was the St. Petersburg tour through Russia. We had a really good time up there. So we welcome everybody, and we apologize if we offend you with your with the teams that we picked to go forward, but that's not going to be the case with Germany.
Yeah, the one thing that I remember the most about Scandinavia is how fit their people are, and then coming back to the U.S. and seeing how not fit.
How unfit. Yeah. And by their people, you specifically mean their women that ride bikes everywhere. Is that correct?
I didn't say that. I said their people.
Yeah, we had a really good time there, and you're absolutely right. Like, everybody's on bikes, and the air is very clean and clear. It was a really fun trip. And also, it helps that since you and I are very limited in our language, despite me taking 8 or 9 years of Spanish 1, we're still very limited in our language, and most of these people, thankfully, spoke much better English than we did of any kind of language that resembled theirs.
Sure.
We had a blast there, but we have a lot going on with the World Cup, Dr. Pete. We got news pouring in. We got injuries to worry about. Not a lot on Mohamed Salah yet. That would be the leader for me. But they're still, like, making noises, positive noises. You know, like, Mohamed Salah is really positive about being able to play in 3 weeks. I mean, you know, you'd said this before. Damage shoulder ligaments, possible, what'd they say, dislocated shoulder. And you had said before that you thought that he would be on the field, but he'd be playing through pain and might lose a little bit of his effectiveness.
Yeah, I think he will definitely be out there. There's no question in my mind. Just hard to say how effective he'll be. They've obviously got ways to get him through the pain. It's just a couple of games, so I definitely expect to see him out there. Yeah, I'm surprised there aren't more big injuries. And this, the thing that's shocking to me, Tom, is you've got these teams playing warm-up games 2 weeks before the World Cup starts, and Lionel Messi is playing, you know, almost 90 minutes against a Haitian team that wants to do nothing except, you know, crush the other team. It makes no sense. Why is he out there?
And they want autographs for Messi after the game, obviously. They also want that. Let's not pretend like they don't want to just play soccer, as I would as well. But at the same time, 70 minutes from Messi, other players playing across the board. I mean, Harry Kane scored. Yay. What happens if Harry Kane gets hurt? I don't understand. You know, they're saying it's their tune-up games. Well, then tune up your backups. I don't think these guys should be playing. Vincent Kompany hurt today. During his game, which wasn't today. I think it was yesterday.
Or maybe play him for a half. But, I mean, they're already in shape from their club season. It's not like they need to get, you know, their lungs back unless they've had an injury. So it really, I mean, if you lose Messi, your World Cup's over, period.
Yeah, I don't
understand. You can say that for if Harry Kane goes down. I mean, it's just too big of a risk for me.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're playing Danny Welbeck up front, you know? Like, that's not the same. And I think your team would take a massive mental blow as well. I just don't like the tune-up games. And, I mean, I understand what the idea is, but I feel like even some of that chemistry can be built and that movement can be built in training. And the point of the World Cup that we've made so many times, Dr. Pete, is that these guys don't play with each other but a few weeks out of the year, which is what makes the game so dramatic. It's not Leo Messi and Barcelona. It's Leo Messi and 10 other guys that he didn't play with all year. He got 2 weeks to train with them and played a couple friendlies now. But, I mean, at this point, you're either going to have it or you're not. I think the risk versus reward for the international friendlies before the World Cup is pretty unbalanced.
Agree 100%.
But, Dr. Pete, we do have a few other little points. Sophie Boufal of the Moroccan team did not make the squad, Dr. Pete.
Next.
Yes, and I was reading into it in some of the Moroccan like news feeds, and they weren't that surprised by it, which surprised me. They were kind of like, oh, he doesn't really fit the scheme. And I'm like, well, I don't know. You got a guy who's a wild card that can come off the bench and grab a goal. And if you're Morocco, like, that's what you need. You know, you need a guy like that.
Yeah, I thought he was one of their big impact players. I was really surprised. I mean, I'm not watching Morocco every qualifier game, but he definitely looked like one of their best players.
Yeah, and that was surprising. Raja Nainggolan, also cut by Belgium, to the surprise of most people, including himself. He immediately retired after finding out this news.
The old 23-year-old retired Jack.
Well, he's 30, old. But like he's been phenomenal, and they just said, we don't have a spot for you in our formation, which is like, I don't know, that's really surprising to me. And then the other surprise cut is Zlatan Ibrahimovic from Sweden, as he had obviously been recovering from that knee issue, ACL tear, MCL tear, that he had with Manchester United in April of last year. He came back for a little while for United in around November, December, looked off the pace, and then got transferred to the MLS, where he's been playing every week and has scored a few goals. But the Swedish national team, essentially, after he tweeted that he was going to come back and play in the World Cup, he hadn't been a part of their qualifying.
Yeah, he didn't play a single qualifier.
And so they said, no, we're taking the team that we qualified with. Which, to me, I understand it for sure, but I don't know. Like, how do you take a guy who can find a goal? How do you take a guy like that off your roster?
And it's not just that. I mean, the guy's a media monster. So you don't even need to bring your PR team with you to Russia if you bring Ibrahimovic with you. You just wind him up and let him go. That means tons of free press for your country. He's probably the best Swedish player of all time. He's the all-time leading goal scorer. I mean, why not just bring him, you know, even as a super sub? Like, you don't have to start him.
Too. Like, you're telling me,
yeah, you have three or four better options up top than him. I'm just a little bit shocked.
He is older. He's 36. But at the same time, like, you look at a tactic like Manchester United uses when they're down, and this is a pretty common tactic. It's brutish, but it's a good, solid tactic when you're down 1-0, and that's to bomb the ball forward to the guy who's 6'5" and can either bring it down, which he does exceptionally well, or head it to somebody else. Like, why wouldn't you want to have that tool in your toolbox?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised, although I did read that if, you know, one of their guys picks up an injury, he could potentially eke onto the squad, but it almost seems like their manager is making it out of principle.
It's a statement.
You know, we've got a team, we don't need him. And I mean, he has not been great in the World Cup. He's played in two World Cups, zero goals. And so, but still, I think he would have added a key element to the team for sure.
Yeah, even if just coming off the bench as a super sub. One more little bit of news, Pete, and that would be the English media. They're trying. I don't know if you saw this story about Raheem Sterling, but they are trying. So Raheem Sterling is a left winger, right winger for the English national team and Manchester City. Had a terrific year for City, scored a lot of big goals. He was photographed during training that he put up on his Instagram, so it wasn't like somebody else took the picture, but he's happy playing soccer, and there's a gun tattooed on his leg, and it's an assault rifle, and one of the news outlets, I think it was The Sun, picked it up and immediately launched a story with a headline that Raheem Sterling is like a scumbag and is promoting guns, and it came out like 2 days later that he had that tattoo on his leg because his father was shot down and he vowed never to touch a gun. The son did not apologize. They doubled down, and it wasn't made any better because Raheem Sterling actually showed up to international camp, I think it was 12 hours late or like a day late. And so he had to apologize. And all of a sudden that media machine that loves to tear that team apart is starting to get its wheels going.
Yeah, the World Cup hasn't even started yet, and they're already trying to tear the squad apart. It's something you can count on every World Cup.
Yeah,
the English press is almost as consistent as the German national team is on the pitch.
Yeah, and we have time to talk about England. I just want to say that, you know, Gareth Southgate, their manager, his big task is to keep that team together mentally. They have a young team. They don't have, like, the mega superstars that everybody's looking at that can't share the ball, like Gerrard and Lampard and Beckham and even Rooney. Like, they don't have those guys to really pick on. You got Harry Kane, you can pick on him a little bit, but the other guys, they haven't really shown the massive egos that the previous teams have had, and you have a different type of English team that they're going to have to withstand this barrage from the English media. I'm sure there'll be at least one more story that comes out about it.
Yeah, I think they're flying a little bit under the radar.
Yes.
At least for them, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's where they need to be. But let's move on to the group. Group F, Germany is at the head of this group.
It's a fun group.
9-2 World Cup favorites. Depending on your bookie, I saw some 5-1s. 9-2 is the closest one I saw. They finished first in their group over Northern Ireland, Czech Republic, and Norway. They were 10 out of 10 in qualifying with a record of 43 goals. They're managed by Jurgen Löw. And I will just say this, Dr. Pete, that they are extremely impressive. However, I don't know if you noticed this, but they have not won a match since they qualified. They've actually lost or drawn the last five. Does that matter?
You know, I don't put much stock in those matches. I think they're more for tinkering with your squad, especially a team that's as seasoned as they are. I would put much more stock in the campaign where they're trying to qualify, because those games everybody's trying, obviously.
10 out of 10, yeah.
And is it amazing to me the squads they've had in the past and how strong they've been, this is the best campaign they've ever had in qualifying. I mean, goal differential, they outscored their opponents 43-4. 21 That's different absurd. Players scored during the campaign. 22 if you actually count our old friend Augie.
Augie the own goal. Absolutely.
They're just a model of consistency. And I guess the big question is for them, will they suffer the champion's curse? And Thomas, do you know who the last country was to win back-to-back World Cups? I was a little surprised at this. You got to go way back.
Yeah. Well, Pele won 3, so not 66. He did win 70. 58, 62, Brazil. Hold on, let me just check. West Germany, Argentina, Italy, Argentina, Germany, Brazil, France, Brazil, Italy, Spain. Yeah. No, it has to be Brazil, and I can't think of the – I don't know the winners that well before 1950.
So. Yeah, I mean, you have to go back 50 years to find a team that's won back-to-back World Cups. And so no one's ever done it in the modern era. And if you look at the World Cup winners over the past 20 years, what they did in the next World Cup, it's abysmal. So after winning in 98, France, they failed to qualify for the group stages in 02. After winning the cup in 06 in Germany, Italy failed to get out of the group stages in 2010. And you'll remember that Spain got crushed by the Netherlands, resulting in their early exit in 2014. So, I mean, it is not easy to repeat success in consecutive World Cups, not let alone, you know, win two in a row. But, it, you know, if there's any squad that can pull it off, I mean, it's got to be the most consistent winners competition has ever seen. I mean, I bet my firstborn son that they'll make it to the semifinals.
I'll let your wife know that you did that. Yeah, I mean, you have teams that have followed up World Cup winning squads lately. It really seems like they fall out, and I completely agree that Germany's one of those teams that are built to last. They won the Confederations Cup. They did not win the Euro 2016. They got knocked out against France in France in the semifinals. A couple other teams of note, Diego Maradona's 86 team that won the final, came back to the final in 1990. And then you also had, let's see, and you have Brazilians in 1994 winning, making it to the final in 98, winning in 2002. So those are a couple teams that have done well after making it to the finals. But overall, you have the champions curse, as you said, the teams that just get dropped out. And this Germany squad, for me, I would bet on them to win the tournament. I mean, obviously they're favorites, but even with their recent showing of five matches that don't matter to me, exactly what you said, I mean, they're just so, they have so much history, and normally the badge doesn't win games. We've talked about that before. I agree with that. But there's something about the mentality of the German national team that leads them into success. Their average finish over the 20 World Cups, excuse me, the 19 World Cups they've actually been in is 3.5, meaning they finish above fourth place in just about every single tournament. The only tournaments that they haven't would be, they were excluded in 1950 due to their actions in World War II, and we won't get into that, Dr. Pete. And they didn't enter in 1930, but besides that, I mean, they really seem to be a team that makes it deep every single World Cup. They've 4 wins, 4 second-place finishes, and 4 third-place finishes, and they're the most successful team in my eyes. I know Brazil has more actual titles, but in my eyes, the most consistent team in World Cup history.
Yeah, I mean, their run of form is really just incredible if you look at it over time. It's almost like, you know, most World Cups you think of the squad turning over a whole lot.
Yeah.
But one thing they do have that they've had since 2006, they've had the same coach, which is unbelievable in the modern era. I mean, there's no question that that really pays dividends. Obviously, it helped them win the World Cup last time around. But it seems like in every other country, you know, after the World Cup, or even before, there's always excuses, finger pointing, players and coaches, but just doesn't seem like there's really ever any finger pointing in Germany. You know, when they came in third place in 06, you know, they were quarterfinalists back in 98. I mean, they totally revamped their program, said, you know, what's wrong here? We need to get back to winning a championship. And that got them to where they were in 2014. They just destroyed the Brazil squad at home on their home soil, which was one of the
7-1 drubbing,
most incredible
crazy game
games in World Cup history.
Yeah, I mean, you remember? I remember texting you about it, and you had gotten up to do something. I can't remember what it was, and you'd come back 10 minutes later, and it was 4-0. You had gotten up, and it was 1-0, and you came back, and it was 4-0, and you were pretty surprised.
Yeah.
Pretty surprised, as the rest of the world was. The good thing about the German national team, beyond their depth, is that they all pretty much play for the same team, and you know how I feel about that.
Yeah, that, I think that is crucial, and they've got a whole bunch of Bayern players in the squad. Bayern's obviously one of the best teams in the world, and so you see when these guys play together on the pitch, I mean, there's never any games that they take off in the group stages.
No.
And I didn't look it up, but I'm curious to see when the last time they didn't win the group. Because the other thing is, if you win your group every World Cup, you're going to get the second place of another group in your first knockout game, and that's obviously huge.
Usually that's better, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and I can tell you in this group when I was looking it up, and I can tell you why Mexico is in trouble, is the second place in this group ends up playing Brazil, most likely.
Yeah, Brazil's group. Yeah.
So you got to win this group.
Otherwise, not looking good.
You are
for,
in trouble.
Yeah, not looking good for Mexico's chance to get past the first knockout game, which I don't think they've ever done. We'll get into that though. But sticking with Germany, the fact that they have almost all Bayern players is huge. Their best player is Manuel Neuer, and you can argue about that because there's so many good players, but he has been considered the best goalkeeper in the world for about 5 years. I think David De Gea is really close to taking over and took it over this year, but that was just because Neuer was actually injured since, what was it, October?
Yeah,
about four games in.
Yeah, he's been out for a long time, and he just played in his first friendly in a long time, had a couple of nice saves.
Yeah, it's huge. That is to me their big quote-unquote question mark if you're going to have one for them, because it's not their talent.
No. And I think that Lowe has a really difficult decision on his hands because he has so much quality in the squad. And it's interesting, who did you have as your the best player on the team and player to watch?
Okay, so I said I had Manuel Neuer as their best player on the team.
I would argue with that in the sense that he's been out for so long that he's probably, right now, he's probably not their best player. But let's just put him aside. I mean, who would your next best player be?
I like Mats Hummels a lot, the center back. it's like a plethora of guys. You got Toni Kroos.
There's like six or seven guys that are all world class, but it's not like they have a Ronaldo or a Messi or anybody like that.
No, not in terms of dynamism, but that's not really what the German squad is about in general.
Exactly.
Although I would say that Leroy Sané has a different type of mold than a conventional winger for Germany, in that he cuts inside. He is very dynamic. And you and I argued throughout the season, we said, you know, is Sané going to even play a game? And you said he absolutely has to. He had a phenomenal season for Man City, averaged either a goal or an assist per game, and was just a complete nightmare for defenders one-on-one, and he's a terrific finisher. Has your opinion changed at all, or just been reinforced by his performances over the last 3 months?
No, he's one of those guys who, when your team's going up against him, like when he's playing Tottenham, I'm just absolutely terrified of him.
Yeah.
And his pace and his ability to finish. I would be shocked if he wasn't out on the field starting. And if he's not starting, I mean, he's the best super sub in the world.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah, just like I said, an absolute nightmare to defend against. You have Thomas Muller in this, and he actually is an interesting point to talk about because he's been up and down in his club form. He's played better with his coach coming back to Bayern. Why am I blanking on the coach's name? I can't think of his name. The Champions League coach. Damn it. He won the treble. I can't think of his name. Anyway, much more comfortable with his coach coming back and playing better. But there was a brief stint of a few months where it looked like Thomas Muller might have problems getting into the starting squad. And for a guy who has 10 World Cup goals in the last two tournaments and is still only 28, and the record, of course, is 16 for all-time World Cup goals, I mean, you have to think that Thomas Muller is in the squad and starting.
Yeah, I think so. The guy is, he's got World Cup football in his veins. I mean, 10 goals total, and he's only 6 goals off the mark. He's got a legit shot at breaking the record, especially the rate at which Germany scores goals.
Yes, and they dispatch, like you said before, they dispatch teams that are much lower quality of them, which isn't always true. You know, having watched Manchester United all season, you see teams sometimes that they play a grinded-out style or a different kind of style, and even though they're the best team on the pitch, they don't necessarily wipe the floor with the other squad, and Germany seems to do that, especially in the World Cup.
Yeah, they always beat the inferior squads into the ground, which ensures that they're going to win the group. And then when they get into the knockout stages and the against teams that are favored against them, which you know might happen in the semis or the finals, they always find a way to win the game. I mean, they'll grind it out. Sometimes it'll be ugly. Sometimes it'll be pretty. But you can pretty much guarantee that. And I'm trying to remember the last time they've gotten crushed. I mean, 98 Croatia
3-0.
Beat them 3-0. But yeah. When's the last time they got really
I can't think of
hammered.
One besides that. And I remember reading that and being surprised because I didn't even remember it. But yeah, they are the history just over and over again. And again, badges don't win you any matches, but having a settled squad mentality does win you matches.
Yeah, they have this belief that, okay, we're the German national squad. We go out and we perform and we win.
Yeah, and they do. And like we said before, I mean, the big part of this team is the Bayern backbone. You have Neuer in the goal. You have Boateng, who has been fighting injury and normally fights injury. He could get injured. You always think about that with him. You have Hummels on the other side of him at the center back. And Joshua Kimmich, 21, 22, had a phenomenal year. Kind of not out of nowhere, but out of nowhere in the world soccer world. Not out of nowhere in the Bundesliga, where people follow that league closely. But Kimmich had a really nice season and emerged as a successor to Philipp Lahm.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of him before until I watched that Real Champions League match, and then I read a little bit more about him, and he's really an up-and-coming, exciting player. Again, like you said, who's going to start, you know, up top for them in the midfield? Because they've just got so much depth, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, my player to watch there is Leon Goretzka of Schalke, currently soon to be Bayern Munich. He's agreed to the transfer. He's a young defensive midfielder who's all over the place, is brilliant on the ball, and will allow Toni Kroos to kind of dictate pace. Now, whether or not they want to go off the bench, they have Sami Khedira. He could start as well from Juventus. Big defensive midfielder. They like to have a big guy like that in there. They have a couple offensive wild cards they can put in. Mesut Ozil for Arsenal, obviously. Julian Draxler of PSG. I'm not a huge fan of him, but he is a guy that has a skill set that can unlock defenses, and you have options off the bench in the midfield.
Yeah, and maybe it's the Tottenham fan of me speaking. I'm not a big fan of Ozil in the Premier League. I don't like guys that, you know, take games off and 2 games later they're the best player in the league. I think it's almost worse because he's wasting his potential. But he does definitely seem to show up for the German national team pretty consistently. Yeah. And I saw some, you know, in reading about you know, who critics think their best player is, a lot of them said Ozil, which was pretty interesting to me.
That sounds pretty lazy. Yeah, people are always looking for the dynamic
player. Are you saying that I was reading articles from 2014?
No, not your reading is lazy, but yeah, I mean, some of the writing can be exceptionally lazy. I know the ESPN FC, their breakdowns are usually just pretty bland. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of options here that you could have chosen besides Ozil, who may or may not start, including Muller, as we said before, and actually an interesting add-in to this team is Marco Reus, Pete, because he's always injured, and he never plays in major tournaments, but he's really good.
How old is he?
28, 29 would be my guess. I had to look it up, but he's never been a big part of a major tournament because he always, you know, he gets bad injuries too, like tears his hamstrings and stuff like that, but there's a good chance that he would actually start over Sané because he's dynamic.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely read his name. You see him every once in a while when he's playing well, but he's always injured, so.
Yeah. But I'm interested to see where they actually put him, and he's 29. Yeah, he just turned 29 on May 31st.
Oh, happy birthday, Marco.
Yeah, how about that? Anyway, but he's a dynamic player. I still would probably play Sané over him, although the idea of bringing Sané off the bench to just maul a back line that's been playing with the movement of Muller and playing against Royce's speed and the passing of Cruz, like, that just, I mean, that sounds awful.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. It doesn't get any more consistent than Germany. We've already talked about their finishes. We've talked about their wins. Let's talk about some of their historic players. A lot of options here as well, Dr. Pete. I know you wanted to pick Oliver Bierhoff, one of your favorites.
Yeah, he's a classic Germany guy. He's not one of their
best. No, he's not. But I remember you always talking about Bierhoff and his headers.
He was really good in the original. Remember FIFA? What was it? FIFA 94 for? Gosh, I want to say it was either Nintendo 64 or Super Nintendo.
94 had been Super Nintendo, but yeah. Bierhoff, huge FIFA player, but the actual historic players we're going to go over, Gerd Müller. I've already talked about him in the last episode when we were talking about our favorite World Cup players. 14 goals in 13 matches, and Dr. Pete, my favorite part of Gerd Müller is his goal-to-game ratio, 68 goals in 62 games at an international level.
Wow, that is unbelievable.
That ratio is higher than Pele's, who I think was, I can't remember, I think it was 73 to 100 caps, 73 goals to 100 games, and like Ronaldo Lima, same kind of thing. They're all about 0.75 goals per game, and Gerd Müller just over the top with over one goal a game, winner of the 1974 World Cup, and 38 goals with the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, Pete.
Oh, was that back when they had their expansion league in the U.S.?
Yeah, yeah. That was the, what was it, the NSL or something like that? They actually had, like, Pele, Beckenbauer. Beckenbauer is the second player I'll mention with that, of course. Everybody knows him more than Gerd Müller, which is why I chose Gerd Müller, honestly. Everybody knows Beckenbauer. He's the most influential player in their history, also won as a coach in 1990, and his performance in the 74 World Cup was pretty absurd, sitting deep and playing balls across and really reinventing a midfield spot that nobody had ever seen before.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure with his history, he doesn't pay for any beers in the beer hall.
Yeah. Franz Beckenbauer, the most legendary player, but for me, Gerd Müller is the most interesting? How's that? Is that fair?
That's fair. They got a lot of history. Sometimes you need more than one guy to talk about, you know?
I mean, with all the wins that they have, I mean, and all the high finishes, you have to have
and
that. So
the funny thing is, you didn't even mention the all-time leading World Cup goal scorer in there.
Yeah, Miroslav Klose. I know. James had him up there with 16 goals. And that's the thing. Like, he scored a ton of goals in the World Cup, but, you know, all these other players were better.
Yeah,
than he was. They just were. I'm not trying to put the guy down.
Yeah, I'm not even.
I think everybody would agree with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Klose was actually the best guy on any of their squads. I mean, he wasn't in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 2010, maybe.
Yeah, I'd have to see a squad list, but I doubt it. I mean, he was just a player that was a role-playing number nine who was terrific at heading and scored big goals. So
yeah, his role was to score.
Yeah, very composed player. All right, let's move to Mexico. 66-1, finished first in CONCACAF over the U.S., Costa Rica, and Panama. But their goal ratio, as in goals for versus goals allowed, was only +9 in a very weak CONCACAF.
Yeah, I mean, the CONCACAF is almost a joke. And, you know, when I was looking at all the qualifying stuff in Europe and Africa, South America, you know, it is... You look at the qualifying campaigns and they can tell you something. But the fact that Mexico came up at the top of the CONCACAF, it means nothing to me. Literally nothing.
No, it means nothing to me either. Also, I am extremely biased in that they are our big rival against the United States in soccer. And those games they play are a credit to rivalries. You know, in American sports, they talk a lot about the best rivalry in sports is the Red Sox versus the Yankees, or like, you know, even Minnesota Vikings versus Green Bay Packers. And a lot of those competitions are 100 years old, which is a big thing. But like soccer rivalries for me, they get much more personal with international rivalries. You know what I mean? Like there's warfare behind them, like countries that have been at war for a long time, countries with religious strife playing against each other during qualifying matches. We've talked about Algeria and Egypt. And I think that the rivalries in international soccer are on another level from domestic leagues, especially where players are making billions of dollars.
Oh, yeah. So Bill Simmons, who's a sports writer in the U.S., who is a lifelong Boston Red Sox fan, and you know he writes all the time about Boston-New York rivalry, he went down to Mexico City for the Mexico U.S. World Cup qualifier a couple years back, and he was absolutely shocked. Like he was terrified being in the stadium, and he said it trumped any Yankees or Red Sox game he's ever been at. And you're absolutely right, these international rivalries are much more intense than, you know, even the local ones. So I've disliked Mexico ever since 1994, mm-hmm. when we knocked them out of the tournament and they disgraced themselves in the process by elbowing super sub Kobe Jones in the face. Mm-hmm. I absolutely despise them, and I'll do my best to look at them objectively, but it's going to be tough. You know, Alexi Lawless, I was reading the other day, he was basically saying that we should root for Mexico.
Oh yeah, they're trying.
Did you
to
see
get,
that?
Yeah, well they're trying to get Mexican fandom.
Yeah, that's a
to the
so.
Sox. Yeah,
he said. Well, they're like, well, why would you say that? You know, they're our biggest rival. He said, well, it's a major rival. You know, I know it rubs people the wrong way, but in a strange way, you know, it's the most American thing you can do to respect and recognize your biggest rival. And I was like, hold on a second, time out. Are you the same guy who's employed by Fox Sports, who rebranded itself as the, quote, home of El Tri after the U.S. got knocked out? Come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, I know he had to do it, but at the same time, like, you know, it is a rivalry. It isn't the biggest rivalry in the world, don't get me wrong. We know where we stand. We understand that, you know, America, United States as a soccer team is not going to have the depth to their rivalries as Germany versus France. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're not going to have that kind of thing. But at the same time, like, you go down to Mexico, the U.S. team gets diapers full of baby crap thrown at them. They get bags full of urine thrown at them. You know, this is a real rivalry, and for me, I will look at this team objectively, but I will be actively rooting for them to finish fourth and out of the group.
Yeah, I just don't understand how anybody could really root for them if you're a true U.S. fan. And
yeah,
if I was a betting man, Thomas, I would certainly bet on Mexico making it out of the group stage,
mm-hmm.
and then also getting knocked out of the round of 16.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Their manager is Juan Carlos Osorio. One of the stories about Mexico is their underwhelming play in the World Cup. Their FA is always interfering with their managers. Their managers are always getting fired. And for a team or for a country that's so large,
it's 125 million people, and they all go bonkers over soccer. Makes no sense.
And to not have any real World Cup history of success is actually really surprising.
Yeah, and every single World Cup since 1990, they've made it out of the group stage and then gotten knocked out in the first game. I mean, that's actually more consistent than Germany.
It really is.
I think they're the most underperforming nation that's ever played in the World Cup.
And I completely agree. And that's not even coming from a place of hate. That's coming from...
from a place of love.
It's just facts. It's just facts. So, recently, they did qualify. They did win the CONCACAF. But they've lost 7-0 and 4-1 versus Chile and Germany, respectively, in Confederations Cup. They're still the strongest team they've had, in my opinion, in 20 years. And they have a wealth of consistent talent, which is surprising for them. Usually they have some real holes in like the outside back area or something like that. But they're pretty consistent spread across Europe. But, Pete, they have a World Cup legacy that's hard to shake.
Yeah, they're like the opposite of Germany. It's almost like once they get out of the group stage, if they make it out, then they're probably going to be staring at a matchup with Brazil. And unless they can find a way to win the group, I really don't think they have a shot to go any further than that. But I will agree with you that they definitely seem to be more balanced this year. They have a lot more players playing over in Europe and not just the Mexican League. And they've got a couple young guys. This young guy, Lozano, had a terrific year.
Chucky Lozano, yeah.
PSV. There are rumblings of him getting snatched up by one of the big boys in Europe.
I think he definitely will.
If he has a solid tournament, you know, 3-4 goals, he'll be packing his bags and adding another zero onto his weekly wages.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I think that no matter what, Irving Chucky Lozano moves on to a bigger club and for a lot of money. He's very, very good and at the heart of their attack. A lot of people just pick Chicharito out as the guy to watch all the time because he is a goal scorer. But, Pete, he's a poaching number nine. He does very little in the run of play, and I'm saying this as a Manchester United fan. He is brilliant in the six. Maybe the best in the world, in all honesty, at finding a position to score in inside the box. And that I'm aware that there is Messi and there's Ronaldo, but this guy doesn't have their skill set, and he scores goals. His conversion rate is extremely high, but it's almost all from within the six.
Yeah, and he has to have the right setup around him.
Yes.
The right team around him. Otherwise, you get what happened with him at West Ham this year, where he was a complete disappointment. I mean, he was basically... I think he hurt the team more than he helped them, wouldn't you say?
Yes, because he's very poor in the run of play. His passing, he can really... very limited, short passing. But if you get him in the 12, in the 6, in that area, he's going to be the guy to score the rebounds, but he needs service. He needs service to do that. And I do believe that he will. I would bet my life on him scoring a goal because he does score goals, regardless of how he plays in the run of play. But whether or not he is actually going to be effective is another question.
You know, he's only got those two goals that he needs. I would expect him to get those goals, but I don't think he's going to get much more than that. And like I said, if they don't win this group, they're going to be in big trouble because they're going to run up against Brazil in the next round.
They are, and then they would fall prey to their history. We've talked about it a lot. One thing I want to add, we like to talk about controversy and drama, and it surrounds the Mexican national team. They were actually disqualified in 1990 from the World Cup for fielding 4 overage players in an under-20 championship tournament. And their then-Mexican FA president, Rafael Del Castillo, called reporters who broke the news as treasonous liars. He basically said because they reported it, they were treasonous liars. And CONCACAF actually extended their ban past the Olympics, which is their initial ban, over the 1990 World Cup, which actually was a a little bit of a tragedy in the soccer world because Hugo Sanchez of Real Madrid didn't get a chance to play in that World Cup.
That's pretty shocking to me. Does that surprise you that they would ban a country from the World Cup for something like that? I mean, I know they're, you know, trying to set an example, but I mean, that is really, that's pretty crazy to me. When's the last, I can't remember the last time a team got banned from the World Cup like that, like a real legit contender.
They've had some bannings. I told you before that, you know, Germany got banned in 50, Japan got banned in 50. World War II stuff.
Yeah, that was for wars. Like, that's a little different than playing overage player in an under-20 game.
There's another one. I can't remember who it is, but I think it was, like, the same kind of thing. They were having problems. You can get banned for not paying your players or not paying your staff, essentially going into administration. But, yeah, very rare in 1990 for them to be banned, and they pretty much always qualify, but they just don't get through.
Yeah, and I don't expect them to get out of the knockout stage again.
Me either. So Sweden, 80-1, second in their Euro Group B behind France and above the Netherlands, Pete, which is a big deal, and Bulgaria. They also beat Italy in the playoffs, so they knocked out two legendary World Cup squads in Holland and Italy.
Yeah, they really had a nasty qualifying group. They had Bulgaria in there who wasn't, you know, they weren't a doormat. And so pretty impressive what they were able to do, and really sent the Italians packing, a lot of very sad Italian fans. And I think there's a reason that, you know, the coach thinks he can do it without Ibrahimovic, because they got through that gauntlet.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it to start the show off, but not having Ibrahimovic is going to be a talking point, even though their manager, Jan Andersen, probably doesn't want it to be.
Yeah, he would rather just go with his almost anonymous cast of characters now that Zlatan's out of there.
Yeah, but there could be more power in the collective, you have to hope. Their best player now is Emil Forsberg for Leipzig in the Bundesliga, a big part of their 2016 run where they had a terrific season, kind of came out of nowhere. Their player to watch for me, and this is not just because I'm a Manchester United fan, is Victor Lindelof. I think a lot will be on his shoulders to organize the defense and to keep Chicharito from getting behind him with a ball that should be an offsides call. You know, if you make the wrong read with Chicharito, he's in behind you by 10 feet.
Yeah, and I think Lindelof's going to have his hands full because the rest of that defense is really pretty old. They're all going to, I mean, this is going to be their last World Cup, and he's got to organize things. And how did he do overall with Manchester United over the course of the season? I know he wasn't always favored in the starting lineup, but it seemed like he was pretty solid when he was out there otherwise.
Yeah, he was in and out of the squad. He's not overly physical. He probably needs to gain a little more muscle to play in the Prem consistently. He reads the ball well, and he distributes really well, but nothing that really stuck out. I think as the season went on, his reading of the game got better, which is why he played a little bit more, but nothing enough to make him a front runner on a Manchester United defense that was stringent, but not really, didn't have stars in it. You know what I mean? You wouldn't have said any of their players should have been in the defensive squad of the year or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Sweden has had some success in the past. It's been a while since they've been in the World Cup.
Yeah.
But they did make it to the final 16, I think, back in 06, and had an agonizing defeat to Brazil in the semifinals in 94.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've had some squads in their history that have put it together. So we'll see. They're in a tough group. They've got a, they're going to get up against a lot of history because Germany and Mexico always make it out of the first round.
Yeah, they have a tough task for sure. Their history, like you said, they've qualified in 12 of 21. They actually have a second place finish, which I think was way back in like the 50s. And two-thirds, their historic player to me, I don't know if you remember him, Pete, but Heinrich Larsson, the blonde.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he had the blonde dreads, and 5 World Cup goals in 13 matches and 37 goals in 106 matches. A player that was really... The amazing thing with him was he played most of his time with Celtic in Scotland.
Yeah, he was like a World Cup hero, club soccer zero.
Well, he always scored a lot of goals for Celtic.
No, that was a little bit harsh. But I mean, he's a World Cup monster.
Yeah, he didn't really make big moves in his career until, like, I mean, he went to, like, Barcelona when he was older, and he went to Manchester United when he was older.
Oh, I didn't realize he played for Manchester United.
He did. He did. But he spent like 7 years at Celtic in his prime. It was kind of weird. He didn't play as much for Barcelona. He scored 13 goals in 40 matches, and he was only loaned to Manchester United for the second half of the Champions League run, and he had some goals in the Roma match. I remember that Roma match that United won like 7-1. He scored in, and he scored in his first game. But he is a hero for sure for Sweden, and has been, you know, he's one of those guys that's always mentioned in one of the better strikers of all time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, other than Ibrahimovic, is he your best player of all time for them?
Yeah,
he's right there. Him and
I think Zlatan's better. But yeah, we already talked about Zlatan.
But Zlatan didn't have any success in 2 World Cups, so it's Ibrahimovic was better when he was playing for his club teams, but wasn't quite as good, didn't do as much as Larsson did for the national team.
Very true, very true. Maybe they'll take him. Let's move on to South Korea. Dr. Pete, 500-1, and not looking good to make it out of the group. They finished 2nd in Asia Group A behind Iran and above Syria and China with a +1 goal differential. Their manager is Shin Tae-yoon. Their best player, you might know him, Dr. Pete, Hyungmin Son, and their player to watch, Son.
Oh, yeah, he's a Tottenham man in full, Thomas, as sure. You know. Had a terrific year for our club, 18 goals, 11 assists, kind of a coming-out year for him. He had 4 goals in the Champions League, a bunch of really critical goals for us in the Premier League. He was a lot of fun to watch, very dangerous player. He's an excellent winger, capable of changing the game really with his pace and his finishing
ability. His size,
too.
Yeah. His size. You know, he's pretty big.
Yeah, I mean, his combination of size and speed is really impressive. I guess it's really a question of how far can one guy take you. And, you know, you talk about Ronaldo and Messi being great players, but even their squads are better than his supporting
way better
cast.
I mean,
he's the only South Korean player to play in the Champions League or even the Europa League this past year. I mean, he's absolutely the player who holds the key for them for sure. And he's actually one of the most popular individuals in the entire country over there.
Well, that's not surprising. This team, there's a really good chance that, like you said, because they have really only one player that sticks out, that they get trashed because they don't have talent, they don't have depth, and their tactical discipline is pretty poor too. They're a team that are an odds-on favorite to have one of those goals that you scratch your head at where somebody passes the ball into the goal or something like that. I mean, I'm not trying to be
mean, but
that is
gaff.
The way it is. Yeah, that's the way it is. In their history, Dr. Pete, they've qualified 10 for 21. They finished in 4th in 2002, and I heard a really good story about the 2002 qualifier, but I'll let you tell it.
Yeah, when we were going back and looking back at that 2002 World Cup, there was a great story about the guy who scored the game-winning goal for South Korea against Italy. The guy's name is An Jung-hwan. He scored the golden goal in extra time, and at the time he was playing for Perugia, who were in Italy's second division, and Perugia's owner, Luciano Gucci, canceled his contract the next day and said, quote, "He was a phenomenon only when he played against Italy. I am a nationalist, and I regard such behavior not only as an affront to Italian pride, but also an offense to a country which 2 years ago opened its door to him," end quote. And then he said, "I have no intention of paying a salary to someone who has ruined Italian soccer."
Oh,
I mean, isn't that incredible? That was the same match that, I don't know if you remember this, but Italy actually accused the referee and FIFA of fixing the match. I mean, they're
probably
not the
not
most
the
gracious losers, but they're going to be watching at home this year, the rest of us in the losers' lounge.
Yes, they are. Gigi Buffon sitting in the losers' lounge because they got eliminated by Sweden. So, you know, they can sit back and watch with the rest of us, exactly like you said. That's a great story, though. I hadn't heard that before, and I was laughing to myself. I'm like, what would happen now in the age of, like, Twitter and the internet? Like, that story didn't really make the rounds that much in 02. I mean, it was
there.
Yeah,
I can't believe we didn't hear about it, but it's like you said, it's a little different back then.
Yeah, that's so crazy. you took me off track a little bit there. Their historic player is Park Ji-young, Manchester United again. 3 goals in 14 matches and an unrivaled work rate. They had, they called him Three Lungs.
Yeah.
Park Ji-young.
Yeah.
Just a runner. And honestly, that 2002 team is pretty incredible because they were limited from a talent perspective as well and very much underdogs. But you talk about a host getting a boost. For them to make it through and finish in fourth place is one of the miracles of World Cup soccer.
Yeah, absolutely. And another little interesting wrinkle was that so South Korea requires males between the age of, I think, 18 and 35 was what they said. They have to be in military service for 2 years. So back in 02 when they beat Italy, or actually it was when they got out of the group stage, they got a pardon from the government. And your boy Park Ji-sung was one of those guys. But I'm wondering, you know, that may be a little bit of a reason for them to try and up their performance. Because they get out of that... I'm serious. They get out of that service requirement. And I was reading an article that some people, some Tottenham fans, are really scared that they might lose Son to that requirement. I mean, it seems pretty hard to believe, but
yeah,
you know, maybe a little bit of extra incentive for the boys when they go abroad.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. Honestly, I see them getting punished in this group.
Yeah, they had as bad a qualifying campaign as any team that qualified for the tournament. They lost to China and Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
They've barely finished 2 points ahead of Syria and Uzbekistan.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have any real confidence in them, and I worry that when they play Germany, and we talked about this with Germany, Germany's just going to lay the sword to them and beat them like they did Saudi Arabia that 1 year, like 6-0, 7-0. I think that could be on the cards against South Korea, and it could be one of those things where their goal differential will be so poor after that match that they won't have any chance to get out anyways.
Yeah, I think you can bet your bottom dollar on that.
Yeah, so even if they get draws or sneak a win against Sweden or Mexico, I still think they don't make it out. So I will name my top four. Obviously, South Korea will be in fourth place for me. It's tough. I'm really tempted to take Mexico third just because they're a rival, but I do think they're good enough to get out of the group, and their history shows they'll get out of the group. So I'll have Mexico second, Sweden third, and I could see Sweden switching it up with Mexico. I just think Mexico has a little more talent. If they bring Zlatan, I'll be honest, I would get them out of the group. I'd get them second and Germany first.
Yeah, that's an interesting little twist there. But
yeah.
I'm a believer in history, Thomas, and Germany's going to win this group, hands down. Mm-hmm. And then our friends from next door, Mexico, are going to take the second place spot. Sweden and South Korea are going to be going home in that order. And I'll just end it from my side by saying there's a famous quote from Gary Lineker that says, "Football is a simple game. 22 men chase a ball for 90 minutes, and at the end, the Germans always win."
That's very fair, considering all the winning they've done. Now, a lot of Brazilians would be insulted by that, Pete, because the Brazilians have 5 trophies. But, you know, the Germans are always there. You can always count on them to make it into the semifinals, and I think they'll be there again. All right, so anything else you want to add besides what Gary Lineker said?
That's it.
All right. For Dr. Pete, I am Tom Miller saying I hope everybody has an awesome week, and let's get ready for the World Cup.